This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
And like PJ Tucker's a player that you can put on Kyrie Irving. You can also put him on Kevin Love, and you can also put him on LeBron James. Like, that kind of player defensively is incredibly valuable.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
A lot of the times, from my understanding, is close games are won by the coach calling those inbound plays and drawing up a quick sideline play for him.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So a few weeks ago on the show, we had a little bit of conspiracy on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. So we talked about Bismack Biyombo's age.
Well, it wasn't really us. It was Reddit was saying these things because his numbers were going down like a veteran.
Wait, you're talking about Serge Ibaka, right?
No, well, Ibaka was mentioned, but it was Biyombo.
Biyombo is the main one they were talking about. And they were talking about how his numbers are kind of going down, like he's older, but he's only been in the league for so long, and he's supposed to be, you know, in his younger 20s, but they're saying, like, I think he's almost 30.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but anyways, that leads to the point where, ironically, this actually happened, mind you, not in the professionals, but up to our north in Canada.
No, wait. I think that makes it even worse. This was in high school. This kid. Right.
Oh, this definitely makes it worse. But we're getting into it. So anyway, up in Canada, there is apparently he was a 17-year-old basketball star. He says he's been an 11th grade student. He's posed there at this Catholic school for 6 months.
Jonathan Nicola,
right. So anyway, he's from South Sudan, but the point of this is he has been playing high school basketball, dominating, and he's actually 30 years old.
He is 6'9", 202 pounds.
Yeah, he was a huge recruit for this high school too. Like they thought this guy was going off to play collegiate ball and everything.
Yeah, oh no, I was watching interviews.
He could be an NBA prospect,
right?
You know, I was watching the interviews and stuff where he was, where the coach is talking about him. Man, I think this guy's gonna have a shot at the NBA. No crap, you're gonna be playing well when you're a 30-year-old at 6'9" and 202 pounds playing against high school kids.
How awkward would it be if some chick asking to prom?
Like, I that's wonder
illegal.
Why
is it illegal? I don't think it's illegal to go to prom with someone.
But if
well,
she's
it's not illegal
well,
to go to prom with someone, but
it's if she's it underage, what, it's frowned upon,
probably. Right? But it as long as anyway it, that yeah. doesn't matter.
My if, thinking though is like, what would be other than the reason that they've said on Reddit is to get out of being in where he's from, South Sudan. So it's like to get out of being living in South Sudan. To get
yeah, and to be fair, I mean, living in South Sudan has to be pretty. It's just horrible right now. Like, the country's got a lot of problems.
Well, the guy's living with his coach. So how awkward for is it
oh.
for the coach?
Oh yeah,
if he didn't know
worse.
And he just found out this kid's like 30.
Well, he's under arrest now. He got arrested.
Well, Canada Border Service somehow figured. I wonder how they figured it out, but mm-hmm. they figured it out and came over and arrested him. So he's going through that.
But you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. We promise we are not faking our ages. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host Tim Tompkins.
I was born in 1982.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer Justin Kuzart.
You only gotta learn how to text "I love you." You don't even have to say it in person anymore. Hashtag stuff's changed.
How about Andre Miller?
No, I don't think you guys are going to get this.
I don't know if Andre Miller knows how to use Twitter.
I actually don't know if he knows. I don't.
He's
not,
40 years
do
old.
Do we follow Andre Miller on our Twitter page?
I follow him personally. I would assume our page does.
Yeah.
No, I know. I'm just messing
we don't
around.
Really,
he's 40. It's just funny.
Yeah. I mean, even if he didn't know how, he would probably be paying somebody to do that kind of thing for him.
Or like this. Yeah. Or like the Spurs are just.
Yeah. There's a PR department for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, Reggie Bullock.
Oh, you know, he's a really good follow on Twitter. Also, yeah. I am so happy that Reggie Bullock is getting an extended run right now and being a contributing NBA player. And this is the part of the show where we like to give you guys a shout out for giving us a shout out by leaving us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, this week we got a review. It's from America. It's called Great Basketball Podcast. It's a 5-star review by Jinxers21. Jinxer says, "You guys are funny, smart, and very informative. I wish you guys made more episodes. That's my only complaint. Your basketball knowledge and insights are well-researched and of high quality.
I don't know about how well-researched. The problem with making more episodes, because now that we moved into this home studio, and it is a lot easier for us to record, the problem is we only know so much about basketball, so if we started churning out like an episode a day, it wouldn't be good content.
Oh, I was going to just go with the fact that we had all had different full-time jobs and that takes up most of our time to prevent us from watching basketball like we would have a daily podcast.
Yeah, I think in order to do it, because I try and catch at least one game a day every day during the regular season, and in order to do a daily podcast on basketball, I think you'd have to be watching a good 4 or 5 hours of basketball a day, and that's without just making up all sorts of information.
Well, and to be fair, you know, this review was left all the way back in March, so for any of you who have left reviews, that's currently where we are. We're in March right now, and that was around the time I believe we were transitioning. So we probably were only recording one a week then. So hopefully with the two a week, at least, hey, you know, that's an improvement.
Yeah, we used to solidly put up one episode a week. And now we put up two episodes a week pretty much every single week. Sometimes three.
Yeah, the home studio is nice. And, you know, we're working out some technical things right now. We're going to start getting back into interviews soon too as well. So that'll be exciting. Maybe we'll have three episodes a week.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, the Los Angeles Lakers have fired coach Byron Scott. They posted the worst record in franchise history in each of the two seasons since he was hired. This year, the Lakers were 17-65. There is some rumors that they're considering Luke Walton, Jeff Van Gundy, and Kevin Ollie. It's worth noting that Thibodeau and Scott Brooks are no longer available because they decided to pick the Wolves and Wizards. Stephen Curry fell in the last possession of the first half in Sunday's game against the Rockets and did not play the second half. The first reports are that Curry scuffed and sprained his right knee and will undergo an MRI on Monday. International basketball reporter David Pick tweeted that Dario Saric has told his teammates he intends to leave Europe for the Sixers this offseason. It has previously been reported that his buyout after this season would be about $900,000. Saric was the 12th pick of the 2014 draft and currently plays in Turkey. He would be subject to the rookie scale if he joins the NBA in the 16-17 season. Kevin Durant was ejected from Saturday's game against the Mavericks for a blow to the head of Justin Anderson. The rule for a flagrant 2 is unnecessary and excessive contact, and the league office will review the foul with the latitude to suspend Durant for Game 5. It's also worth noting that the NBA sent out a memo to the teams before the playoffs emphasizing the crackdown on blows to the head, whether or not they were intentional. Sunday, they announced that Durant would not be suspended for Game 5, but he was fined $15,000. Staying on the dirty play by the Thunder, Westbrook was fined $25,000 for inappropriate language towards a fan. This incident happened during Game 4. And lastly in your news, the Knicks apparently have trade interest in Darren Collison. Collison is scheduled to make $5.2 million next season with the Kings. And that's your news for this week.
When it's that part of the show where we want to give a shout out to one of the sponsors who helps make this show happen every single week, and that is SeatGeek. If you are looking to buy tickets for anything, NBA playoff action right now, any other sport that's going, baseball, hockey playoffs are active as well right now, concerts, you name it, they've got tickets for everything on the free SeatGeek app. You just got to download it in either the Google or Apple App Store, or if you're on a Windows phone or some other weird phone for some reason, you can just check it out in the App Store. It's free. And what SeatGeek does is it's a ticket reselling website, but what's pretty cool about SeatGeek is, unlike Ticketmaster and some of the other guys, that the price you get when you first go to buy and look at the ticket price is the price you're going to get when you check out. There's no hidden fees. There's no, you know, random $20 printing your ticket fee or anything crazy like that. The price you see is the price you get. Also, another cool feature that you can use on SeatGeek is the seats you're looking at are either going to be green, and if it's green, you know it's a great value. If it's red, you know it's not the best value. So that way you always know you're getting the best value possible whenever you're going to whatever sporting event or other event you're going to. And when you're buying your tickets on the settings tab, make sure you type in the promo code DISH, and what will happen is you'll save $20 on your first purchase. It'll allow you to go to your event. You'll know you're getting the best value possible for your seats, and you'll save yourself some cash.
And you support the show. And if you do end up going ahead and getting tickets on the SeatGeek app by using using the promo code DISH. Send us a message on Twitter. Let us know you did it, and we will give you a shout out on that next episode. So what was probably the least surprising decision coming down in the awards? And my issue with this award wasn't the fact that they gave it to McCollum. I get it. I understand it. He played well given the opportunity. He deserves it. Blah, blah, blah. But I kind of felt like this was preordained 2 months into the season that this award was just going to go to him regardless.
I feel like it was almost last season, too. Like, I feel like at the end of last season, we were talking about how this kid was going to come into the, you know, after all of his teammates left, him and Lillard, we were talking about how he was going to have one hell of a year because we saw what he did in the playoffs.
Right.
We were super excited for him to come out, and he lived up to the expectation. So
it was unlike Otto Porter.
I'm not gonna lie. I said after the playoffs last year, you thought McCollum and Otto Porter were gonna take the leap, and McCollum did. Otto Porter didn't. So yeah, this was a bit preordained. But at the same time, I mean, we all argued on the show that
I kind of
McCollum deserved it. I think with this award, and
he argued for Gary Harris.
Let me just
any votes?
He did not very many.
Well, let me just give the rundown. He went from 6.8 points per game in 2014-2015 to 20.8 points this season. Field goal went from 43% to 45%. Three-point percentage went from 39% to 41%. His free throws went from 69% to 83%.
While that's true, Justin, he actually got significantly worse within 10 feet of the basket.
I know, and my question is, why are you stuck on that one stat? That's nitpicking.
Because
one
Tim
stat.
Because Tim just doesn't want McCollum to be great.
But that 14-point improvement is the most since Tony Campbell, and that was from 6.2 to 23.2, and that was back in the 89-90 season.
Yeah, the voting for this wasn't even really close. I mean, CJ McCollum had 101 first place votes for 559 total points. Kemba Walker came in second with 7 first place votes and then he had 166 total points. Yeah. Giannis Antetokounmpo was third. He had 4 first place votes, 99 points. And then Steph Curry, who we debated whether he had that argument as the MVP, he actually came in fourth, got 7 first place votes for 83 total points. I mean, we all had Giannis. I know you mentioned Kemba on your list.
Yeah,
of all the awards so far, I mean, I thought defensive player was pretty accurate too, but I think of the three awards that have been given out so far, I think this is the most accurate.
Well, and what I was going to ask is, and maybe this is towards your Gary Harris talk as well, Tim, is does how well the team is playing factor in to the most improved? Because the Trailblazers as a team exceeded everybody's expectations.
Well, I mean, look at Giannis though, coming in third in the Bucks.
Yeah,
didn't live up to expectations.
But Curry was there, and they're kind of exceeding expectation, which I know sounds weird, but
they won 73 games. They beat the all-time record. And I mean, I think that exceeded anybody's expectations.
Kemba Walker exceeded expectations.
I mean, Kemba Walker was
general.
Good, but he was also a lot of the reason why Kemba Walker was good is because he had Nick Batum around him.
Yeah, and we're seeing how that's not working for them at the moment.
Well,
playoffs.
I mean, that's just more unfortunate than anything.
I kind of liked what McCollum said when he got the award. He kind of was like, almost seemed like he was offended. He said, I've been a good player. It's just circumstance. There's a lot of good players in the NBA who are in a box. Maybe they have players in front of them. Maybe they're hurt. Maybe their coaches don't like to play young players. For me, it wasn't going to happen right away. You have to wait your turn sometimes, which he was referencing the fact that he was behind Wes Matthews.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but be happy. You just won a major award.
In radio, one of the compliments I hate getting the most is how much better I sound.
Yeah.
I hate that compliment.
No, I completely understand where McCollum's coming from being upset. He's like, no, I've always been good. I just haven't been able to show it yet.
Right.
Well, you hate all compliments, too.
I don't hate all compliments. I know what you're referring to, and I'm not going to get into it on the show because it's none of our listeners' business.
Oh, no.
But that compliment always in particular has bothered me because it's like,
yeah,
I thought I sounded fine before.
Yeah, but it is one of the things. You can go back, and you'll be like, wow, I have improved.
Well, everybody improved. Like, I listened to my first show, or we listened to the first episode of this podcast, and I think it's fair to say that we sound a lot better now. We've improved.
You know what's funny about that is I went back and I listened to one of my first traffic reports from 2014.
Yeah.
And I was actually using this for somebody that I was helping develop right now in real life. But I remember being so proud of it. You know,
yeah. No, I'm just, yeah.
It's so, and I go back and I listen to it and I'm like, oh dude, it's like, It's hideous.
It's cringeworthy. Right.
But that's what they're referring to. It's impressive how much they can see the change.
Right.
But I agree. I get what you're saying, because I would also be like, don't tell me that.
Right. The Giannis thing, the only reason why I didn't have Giannis in there was simply because it's a bit recency bias, and if he would have been playing the point and playing as he had all season, like he was at the end of the season, I think it would have been
more.
A bit more deserving. I am honestly really surprised, though, that Gary Harris didn't get more votes. A lot of the time this award goes to the freshman becoming a sophomore player who's getting more minutes, which is basically what Gary Harris was too.
Yeah.
And if you look at
look
at the advanced stats, Gary Harris didn't get worse around the rim like CJ McCollum.
CJ McCollum went from a -4 offensive win share to a +2.6 or something like that.
That's
just wants to find that flaw in CJ McCollum. Let it go.
He went up overall. His percentages went up in that percentage. No,
but
he did not.
Within 10 feet, they
definitely
went down.
I know, but how much do you
want
McCollum shooting that?
I want him to be able to finish around the rim.
But if he's knocking down the threes and the two-pointers consistently.
So wait, he is basically only effective within like 7 feet on the court?
Well, once he gets better teammates, he will be less guarded when he drives in the lane.
You know, that's a valid point. We haven't quite talked about it yet, but we're going to talk about how the Clippers are specifically shutting down the Trailblazers backcourt. I went and I looked at the advanced numbers earlier today. I tweeted it out from the Drive and Dish podcast Twitter. Mm-hmm. They're really bad.
Yeah.
Both him and Lillard. There's like a 40-point differential.
But think about it. And this isn't...
Lillard's three-point shot has just not been there.
And this isn't a dig at the other players on the Trailblazers, but like if you shut those two down, if you're the Clippers, yes, make the rest of the team beat you. And who's going
to
beat you?
Right, and that's what they're doing. But before we move on to that, let's talk about Melo skipping Phil Jackson's triangle offense workshop. Does that have anything to do with him thinking that he is going to waive that no-trade clause?
I don't think this is the biggest of deals. It was more of like a rookie showing type thing. Like I read the list of people that went. Porzingis, Grant, Early, Galloway went. They said Tony Roten was there. They said Jose Calderon showed up.
Well, of course Tony Roten was there. Tony Roten better be there.
Yeah, Robin Lopez showed up. Your boy Williams didn't show up. He wasn't there. Nobody's talking about that.
Well, Williams might waive his mm-hmm. player.
Are we really comparing Derek Williams' meaning and impact to Carmelo Anthony's right now?
No.
Well, Derek Williams was really good this year.
Derek Williams
the whole
in
point,
his role.
Okay.
The whole he point was. That people are reading into this is because Carmelo said he wanted to choose or have a voice in the offense that they run and have some input. And I know he wanted Thibodeau to be considered. Jackson didn't consider him. I think maybe Carmelo was a little upset by that, but I honestly don't think this is a big deal.
I mean, here's a serious question. like, really, I have a serious question, though. Is Phil Jackson a bad GM?
No. Why do you think he's a bad GM?
I don't know. It's just something like it seems like Phil Jackson just continually is trying to put the triangle in place.
He really likes the triangle.
They don't have the pieces for the triangle.
Here's a
like,
bet.
They're hurting the team when they're trying to teach these guys a triangle.
Arguably, Robin Lopez was really good in the triangle.
I mean, you look at Kurt Rambis. Kurt Rambis turned Porzingis, basically, he put him on the interior. That doesn't make any sense. Like, so many questionable things.
I am willing to bet $20 that David Blatt is their coach.
We got to stop betting.
Well, Justin's got to stop betting. He's already in the hole to me.
I know. No, I'm willing to bet.
I'm waiting for my annual. I said this before the show. I'm waiting for my annual. Tim still, for some reason, thinks LeBron James isn't going to go to the finals this year and just gives me $20 bet, which has happened.
If the Cavs face the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, I will by all means
make that bet.
Yeah, I'll make that bet.
What about Toronto?
No, but I will do it with the Heat.
I've been really
unimpressed with Toronto so far. I think they're really struggling against the Pacers, but we'll talk about that later. Moving on to Jared Dudley.
So he wants a 3-year contract with the Wizards. Do you think the Wizards should, I guess, bring him back?
Yeah, dude. Jared Dudley's been solid. I loved his quote, though, and he said this before. It's so Jared Dudley, man.
Oh, I was dying.
I hope he retires in Phoenix. It's funny because this is a quote I actually used when I was out there single trying to find a woman, but he said, I'm never anybody's first or second or third option. I'm your fourth option. So if you don't get your girlfriend you want right away, I'm the one at the end. Look at how much better the Bucks were when he was playing for him. Like, he's just really good glue role player, and he wanted to play the four this year. He did so effectively.
He played in 81 games for the Wizards, who were very injury-ridden. He started in 41, averaged almost 8 points on 48% shooting. about 4 rebounds and about 2 assists in 25, almost 26 minutes.
Yeah, I think right now he's making about $5 million. If he can get 3 years, 20, 3 years, 15, you know, there's no reason not. He's a really good locker room guy, too.
Yeah, also, really good locker room
guy. It's worth mentioning, though, he's 33 years old, so if they did give him the 3-year deal, he'd be 33, 34, depending on when his birthday is. But, I mean, I don't think that's the biggest of deals. Do you think he's doing this because he thinks he can get more money because of the cap going up?
Well, no, I think that he needs to sign a 3. Like, this is his last contract. Yeah. I think he probably knows it.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's basically a mid-level exception. Is Jared Dudley worth a mid-level exception?
Well, every NBA player, you want that level of stability. If you're playing, you know, with Jared Dudley, he's been playing on how many one-year deals and just short contracts recently. And, you know, you want that stability, especially as you end, you know.
I agree with you, Kevin. Their players' careers are short. There's only a finite amount of time that you can have as a player.
I do think Dudley is going to be really successful, like, in the media post-basketball.
Oh, dude,
He's just one of those guys.
Another player that's declining their player option or, you know, in the similar system is Seth Curry with the Kings. So, but the Kings are going to have him on a restricted free agent, so they'll be able to match depending.
Match his $1 million option?
Exactly.
They'd be matching the new contract right
now. If you're Curry, this was the smart – not the Curry everyone thinks of, his brother. But if you're Curry, you know, this is the smart move. You're on, like, the minimum, and now with cap going up. And I was looking at his numbers for the last 11 games of the season. He averaged 15 points, almost 4 assists, and about 3 rebounds on 46% shooting.
Well, that's my question, though. Was that stretch of games enough to warrant him a bigger contract? Or would he have been better off to play one more year knowing he'd get more minutes and then go sign that contract?
Well, he's betting on himself. I mean, that's the reality of it. I think there's a little bit of the cap going up, but I think he's betting that people saw those last 11 games. Because the fact of the matter is Seth Curry didn't really play that much this season until kind of the end of the season. And he's hoping that, you know, people kind of have recency bias and that they saw how well he played in those last 11 games and that he can, you know, he wants to see how much other teams are going to bet. I don't think it's a bad move for Seth Curry. Because at the end of the day, like Justin said, he is a restricted free agent. The Kings can bring him back if they so choose. You know, he's betting on himself. And the question is, how much does a team want to bet on him?
Yeah.
I just, you know, I'm not fans of signing guys after 11-game hot streaks when they haven't really played all year. So, like, I'm not really going to throw a ton of money at him. But there has to be a little bit of intrigue with the guy.
Here's the other question. How much does his brother being the best player in the NBA help him in this possible free agent? Like, are people going to give him a little more money thinking maybe he has a little bit of his brother's ability in him and maybe he's going to turn it on?
Or can he sell tickets?
I don't think Seth Curry is not going to sell tickets. Come on. He doesn't have that much.
Well, here's the thing.
They just see Curry and they're like, whoa.
Right. But some people get really drunk at these NBA games. They see a Curry jersey for half the price of the other Curry jerseys. They go buy it.
How much does that? What's the percentage on that?
How many Seth Curry jerseys exist?
Right. I kind of want one.
Are the Kings selling, Sacramento fans, are they really? I don't think they're selling these at the team store.
I guarantee you they are.
Seth Curry jerseys.
I guarantee you they are in the team store.
He didn't play until 11 games left in the season, really.
It's a Curry jersey.
Yeah, you know what I kind of want? We need to get an endorsement with, like, a jersey creator or something like that, because I've got a weird list of jerseys.
Know who I want an endorsement? We talked about this earlier. Stance, if you're listening to this, I
those
really
socks are
like
awesome.
Your socks are the best, and I really will, like, I will vouch for your product. I'm giving you a little free promo here. Like, Stance, if you're listening to this, please reach out to us.
Let us a Stance for Stance.
Don't you? I got some Pumas on.
No, they're pretty nice.
Socks are the most underrated article of clothing of all time.
I can't sleep
if I have cold feet.
No, you can't sleep with socks on.
No, I just won't fall. It doesn't matter how tired I am. I won't fall asleep.
No way.
I get the worms in my feet.
When I lived up north in Philly and New York, I was wearing socks all the time and I went to sleep. All the time.
Okay, we aren't in Philly.
No, but back to the topic. Curry, Quincy Acey also opted out. They're saying Caron Butler will probably opt out.
No one wants to play for the Kings.
James,
man.
Anderson might opt. They said he's probably going to opt in.
Okay.
And you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA.
So, speaking of the playoffs, or transitioning to the playoffs, I guess more accurately, is that the 2016 NBA champion odds came out, and I just want to list the top four teams in their odds to win it all. Okay. The Golden State Warriors are the only team that is favored to win the championships. That is by a negative 135. The Spurs are the second most at a positive 325. The Cavs, third most at a positive 375. OKC Thunder, a positive. You guys guess how much?
400?
No, positive 1400. Yeah, so you're looking at a massive drop.
Yeah.
Really, there's a big drop after the Golden State Warriors, but it looks like the fourth most likely team to win the championship, if they win and you go bet on them, you're going to make a ton of money.
Yeah, like if you put money down on OKC mm-hmm. and they do win it, you're going to be living good.
We're not encouraging that, by the way. Yeah, but most of these teams that we're talking about that are in the mix to win it all are in the Western Conference. So we're going to start right there. And more because the West is kind of settled at this point for the most part. I mean, none of these series, we've been saying this for really since the playoffs started, but they just haven't that great.
The first round has been awful.
The Rockets are making a run.
Dude, the Rockets celebration, if you're listening to this right now and you haven't seen it yet, when James Harden hit that three went to the shot of the
bench. Well, the jumper, it wasn't a three.
Whatever. The game-winning shot.
Fade back.
Yeah, that he apparently created contact on and they say it shouldn't count. Doesn't matter.
Whatever.
The shot of the bench and the look of sheer disappointment that they knew they had to be embarrassed one more time playing the Warriors.
What was it
we
were saying?
Well, Clint
Capella
was fired up.
They have
let's
to
let's
change.
Give Clint Capella some credit. He ran on the court.
You know
he
why that
a
was?
Fist bump there. He's excited.
You know why that was? He was the only one that didn't book his vacation flight to wherever he was going.
I mean, the Rockets won that game by taking it, and I figured this out myself. I counted it up. I busted out the calculator.
Nice.
They took 26 more shots than the Warriors.
Okay.
Klay Thompson went 0-for-7 from three. Curry didn't play, and they won by 1 point. If that's what it takes for the Rockets to beat the Warriors. I mean,
just do that then.
Right.
Well, it also helps that Curry's out, although I just got the update from Woj saying Steph Curry plans to play game four, so.
Yeah, no, we're recording this on Saturday.
So the next round matchup is going to be Warriors-Clippers, and this Clippers team is riding really high right now.
Blake Griffin looks like the old Blake Griffin.
Okay, that's true. That's an eye test thing. If you look at his... Out of all the starters, Blake Griffin has the worst differential of all the starters, and that's including Jamal Crawford. He has an offensive on the court offensive rating of 110, a defensive rating of 94, which is still pretty good. I mean, there's a difference of 16 right there. But out of all the starters, and you know, their sixth man of the year in Jamal Crawford, he's actually the worst.
Well, how much is that him just trying to get back into the game? I mean, he was out for so long.
Well,
I feel
we're also
like
talking
it's
a two game sample size too.
Yeah, no, it's a super small sample size, and in that small sample size though, the Clippers have an effective field goal percentage of 53%. They're only turning the ball over 8% of the time. They're offensive rebounding the ball 25% of the time, which is gigantic. They're getting to the free throw line 23% of the time, an offensive rating of 117, and they're averaging 108 points per game. In the way that the Clippers have been beating the Portland Trailblazers, and you brought this up earlier, Justin, was that they're shutting down the guards. I mean, they're hedging really hard on every single screen, and that they're sort of playing like a zone defense on them, and they're keeping one or two big men by the basket the whole time while hedging on every single pick and roll. And they're basically saying, look, Portland, your bigs have got to beat us because we're going to shut down your guards. They're about to go up against the Warriors. They're riding high. They're feeling good. Can the same strategy be used to beat the Warriors?
I was just thinking between Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan down low, for those guys being banging down there with Draymond Green, I would assume, I'm thinking Draymond Green's going to get really flustered.
Well, the big difference for me is that I think Draymond Green is significantly better than big Portland is throwing out. So that in itself is going to provide a unique challenge. I think that Iggy coming off the wing and the bench is going to provide a unique challenge. I mean, the fact of the matter is Portland's been a great story, but the Warriors are a completely different team. I think that strategy, in theory, should be what they try to do. You know, if you're able to limit Curry and you're able to really limit Klay Thompson, then of course you're going to have a much better chance to beat the Warriors team. The question, but that's much easier. You know, no disrespect to Dame and CJ, but they're not Steph Curry and Klay
Thompson. Problem with Dame and CJ is they don't run as many, you know, pick and rolls, and they're not even running many screens off the ball.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's not a lot downstairs.
And the Warriors do a whole lot of that.
So do you guys know what the offensive rating is for the Portland and the Portland backcourt too is the second best backcourt in the NBA this season.
Right.
The offensive rating when for both those guys are the same. 85 points per 100 possessions. Do you know what the defensive rating is for those guys?
It's probably terrible.
120. You're looking at like a 35, if I'm doing the math right off the top of my head, differential between offense and defensive rating. It's a negative net 35 right there.
That's bad.
But that's also, if you look at it, you look at the strength of the Warriors. It's their backcourt, obviously.
Honestly, so pretty much what's going to happen, and this is kind of the way I see it, is maybe Iggy's going to have a big game. You know what I mean? For the Warriors, if they're trying to shut down Curry and Klay, and Draymond Green's banging down low with the big guys, kind of frees up Iggy a little bit.
I think Draymond, I mean, Iggy is great, but Iggy's biggest contributions at this point, and go back the last year, of all, or just his defense more than anything. I mean, yeah, Iggy could have that game, but I don't think he's going to be their main source of offense.
No, I don't, but I think there's going to be one game there where the Clippers are going to say, okay, if you're going to beat us.
Well, it sounds like they're making the other team. They're choosing who's going to beat you. So if it's going to be Iggy, they're going to say, Harrison Barnes, you're going to beat us.
Yeah.
They're cutting off the three-point shooting, and they're cutting off anyone dunking.
Well,
and they're saying, beat us from the mid-range.
How concerned are you about the Clippers bench and how they're going to match up? How are you worried are you about a guy like Sean Livingston against, you know, eating up against Austin Rivers?
Aldridge is going to go off.
I mean, something that we haven't really talked about a lot this year is how much the Warriors haven't been getting from their bench as opposed to the year before. And Azili's been banged up.
If Curry's ankle is bothering him, he's going to have a very rough time with Chris Paul.
Yeah, and the Clippers are feeling really good about themselves right now. Like, I think the Warriors win, but I wouldn't be surprised if this went six or seven games.
Right.
Like, and the regular season was closer than, yes, the Warriors won, but they won all those games pretty close.
Well, and just for the simple fact, too, you know, it's not really something statistics are going to back up, but the Warriors and Clippers have been a bit of a rivalry in recent years. You know, this is the Western Conference Finals matchup that we all were looking forward to last year. You know, Curry's gotten the best of Chris Paul recently, but Chris Paul especially, you know, he's looking to make a deep playoff run that's evaded him for this point of the career. And for the Clippers, you know, this is really their chance. You know, we talked about there's going to be a lot of big questions with this team heading into next season if they don't get it all together in the core of this team, and how much longer can they do this, and do they have the right tools to be able to, you know, take that next step. And you're going to find out here. You're going up against the best team in the league. The Clippers have got to be feeling good against themselves. You know, we thought Portland might give them a little bit of a run, but the Clippers have pretty much manhandled Portland so far. Game three later tonight, so we'll see if that continues. But with Blake Griffin coming back, the Clippers have basically been fighting a lot of injuries and adversity all season long, and I think you have to be feeling pretty good if you're finally healthy at the right time of the year.
So the next matchup that we pretty much know, sorry Dallas fans, Spurs OKC. Did you guys know that Enes Kanter in the playoffs has a PER of 33.76?
Two, before we go any farther, I would just like to point out, it seems like OKC is playing so dirty right now, and it makes me so mad.
Yeah, you were telling me, can you explain a little bit more? Because I kinda...
Raymond Felton getting elbowed in the face by Steven Adams. I think Ibaka got him once. Who was throwing punches down low? I think Durant was being looked at and got assessed of a technical after the game because he was throwing punches. Like, they're playing dirty. This is the Mavs, the team you were supposed to not really have too much trouble with, and they're flustering you enough to be throwing punches, and, oh, you start throwing elbows at Raymond Felton?
Well, the Mavs guards have been lighting up OKC.
Yeah.
That's an issue, and I wonder, you know, how much that led to it. I mean, J.J. Barea, you know, he's been playing with, like, one groin or something.
Williams, he has a sports hernia.
They're all injured, but their guards have really been lighting up OKC, and so that might be part of that frustration. That's one of my concerns, is when they play the Spurs, how OKC cannot allow the Spurs guards to just run laps on them like the Mavs guards have, because the Mavs guards are all injured and none of them are very good.
Right. If you're Patty Mills and you're Tony Parker, you're just watching J.J. Barea, Raymond Felton, Williams, whoever you got to watch. You just see what they're doing, because...
Yeah, they're getting beat by J.J. Barea.
I had so much confidence even in my bracket, I put the Thunder beating the Spurs, and I wish I could go back and change it now, because them playing dirty shows me they're getting frustrated with the Mavs, and I'm done.
That you're really bothers winning. You?
It pisses me off.
Really?
Yes. No, don't play dirty. They're the Mavs. You're supposed to be able to beat them. You are the better team. Come on.
Well, the game, too, I mean, realistically, that's probably the worst possible game Kevin Durant could have ever played.
I just wanted to know, when he was missing all those shots, that was also a career high of shot attempts from him. Why do you keep shooting?
When you make those shots, like, the idea is you shoot yourself out of it. Like, not, like, out of the game, but out of the rut you're in. And I get what, like, I get that, but after a while...
Well, we're talking about a career high in shots, though.
Yeah, like, maybe... Maybe at that point, it just wasn't your night.
Right. I'm not confident about OKC beating the Spurs anymore.
The way Kawhi Leonard's playing right now.
Well, more so for me, at least, is when I watch OKC, they just make too many dumb mistakes. And they do it all game.
Yeah. Well, and I just, like, I'm still not over the fact that we've seen OKC melt down a lot this year.
During the fourth quarter.
We saw OKC not be able to close out that game two against Dallas. Even though they had all the chances in the world and were playing the worst game, they still couldn't get it done. I just don't think, like Tim said, I don't think San Antonio is going to make those mistakes. I think San Antonio, OKC used to be able to beat San Antonio off their athleticism and... I just don't know that they have enough of that this year to get by them. I think Westbrook is a bit of a bad matchup for San Antonio, but I just think in the end of games, they're leaning too much on Westbrook and Durant. There has to be diversity.
Charles Barkley brought this up, and I brought it up to Tim off the mic. What he's upset most with Kevin Durant is obviously you can't put a big on Kevin Durant because he'll just, you know, dance around him pretty much and go and do whatever he wants. So you have to put a small guy on Kevin Durant.
Yeah, he gets super flustered with small guys.
Right, and so...
Patrick Beverley just kills Kevin Durant.
So what Barkley was saying is, why not, if you're Kevin Durant, when they put a small guy on you, post him up. You're bigger than them, post him up. It's going to draw a double team, and then somebody's going to be open. If you can't make the shot, somebody's open for the pass.
Well, maybe it's because they have a whole bunch of guards who can't do anything. How frustrating is that for OKC? I mean, you've gone this whole time since Harden, and you still can't get... You know, they're having Randy Foy run the backup point, and it's just like, Randy Foy can't shoot. He's not a point guard.
Yeah,
no, it's not good. But, I mean, besides Durant and Westbrook, Game 3 when they won in big, you know, they got 56 points out of Ibaka, Cantor, and Waiters. If they can get contributions from those three guys specifically, you know, we've been singing Cantor's praises all year, but if they can get those three guys playing efficiently and to help take some of that stretch off Durant and Westbrook, I think they're going to be in it. If you look at my bracket, I have this series going 7. Like, I do think OKC is going to battle. But I also think, too, Billy Donovan is a rookie head coach. You're going up against the grandmaster in Greg Popovich. And you wonder how much, you know, this is...
You lose. You lose in the coaching matchup. You lose in the decision-making. You lose in the turnovers. I'm glad you brought up Ibaka. This amazed me. During the playoffs, you guys guess what the offensive rating is of Ibaka when he's been on the court.
I feel like it's going to be high.
Yes. 185. Right? When Kevin Durant has been on the court, his offensive rating per 100 possessions is 95. His defensive rating is 97. They're actually worse with Kevin Durant on the court. Of course, that's a small sample size. That has something to do with that game where he shot 1,000 shots. Kevin Durant also is shooting like 20% from three in the playoffs.
Well, and on the Spurs side... What did Kawhi Leonard do the other night? He had like 30 points, like 6 assists, 7 rebounds, 0 turnovers, like 5 blocks, 2 steals. Like Kawhi Leonard is playing near perfect right now.
Kawhi Leonard's going to shut Kevin Durant down. I don't think this series is going to be all that close. I don't think it's going to go 7. You can't make stupid mistakes, and that's OKC makes 2, 3, 4 stupid mistakes a quarter, and you just can't do that against the Spurs.
Not the Spurs. The Spurs are going to make you pay every single time.
Absolutely.
You can't have 5-minute stretches where you aren't playing defense.
No.
Or you're losing people off screens, or your rotations aren't right. Like they're going to get dominated in this, and it's too bad. I really do hope for a more competitive second round with some of these matchups, because I think that the first round, apart from a couple of particular series, has been eh.
I think in the West it'll be a bit more competitive, but it does seem like we're preordained for a Golden State San Antonio Western Conference Finals. But remember, we also said the same thing last year with Golden State and the Clippers. You never know. Oklahoma City's no chump team. I just don't see him beating San Antonio.
You know what they say. The more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Want to know a little secret about education? It'll improve your sex life.
It's random NBA player highlights on the Drive-A-Dish podcast.
This week's random NBA player of the week is Walter McCarty. McCarty is a 6'10" power forward hailing from Indiana, where he played his high school ball at William Henry Harrison High. He would then play his college ball at the University of Kentucky starting in 1993, winning a national championship with the team in 1996. McCarty was then selected 19th overall by the Knicks in the 1996 draft, where he played for the team for 1 year until 1997, when he was traded to the Boston Celtics, where he played from 1997 through 2005. He would then be traded to the Suns for a second-round pick, spending one final season with the Clippers, then signing there as a free agent before retiring in 2006. McCarty was mainly known as a key energy guy off the bench for Boston and was loved by fans for his hustle and grit. Now, post-NBA life, he would then go on to coaching, taking assistant jobs first in the college ranks at Louisville with Rick Pitino, before working with the Pacers and now currently for the Celtics. So why McCarty, do you ask? Earlier, the Wizards and Hoops Hype posted a vine of Jerry Stackhouse dunking in his older age. McCarty wasn't too happy, tweeting back a surprised face when they said that Stackhouse was the best dunking coach in the league, and then posting his own video showing not only the gray in his beard before then throwing down a nasty jam of his own. He's also a pretty interesting dude, releasing an R&B album and even singing the national anthem during All-Star Weekend during 2006. But all in all, McCarty averaged 5 points and almost 3 boards a game during his career. Your random NBA player of the week, Walter McCarty.
Switching over to the East. You know, we aren't going to spend too much time on the series, but I've been really impressed with the Pistons and how feisty and fiery they've been and everything.
Yeah.
But it is a problem for the Pistons when you cannot keep your best player on the court down the stretch. And every time they take Andre Drummond out and Baines comes in,
it just goes downhill so fast.
And Keith Smith, who's a friend of the show, Real GM, his counter to that was, is he really your best player when you can't play him down the stretch? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what do the Pistons do? This season doesn't matter. The season's over for him. Moving forward with Andre Drummond,
if you can't
keep him on the floor.
Teach him the freaking granny shot. Like
make him do it?
Like, just make the damn shots. Like, I get it that it's harder or whatever.
Is it hard? I mean, Rick Barry had a Hall of Fame career.
No, I'm saying in general, like, it's harder for big men to shoot free throw, but come on, man. Like...
Right,
you got to.
What do the Pistons do though?
Well, you hope they change the Hack of Drummond rules this year.
Yeah,
I mean seriously, really that's. I mean, if that's going to change, that's going to solve their problem right there. We have to keep that in mind. If not, you got to pay big money then for a really legit backup center. You know, yeah. A guy like maybe an Ed Davis type in Portland who is having a lot of success, or just somebody that can come in and play.
I mean,
Baines
is solid. It's just that they're so much worse when Andre Drummond's off the floor. And I feel for the guy. I feel for the team. It's got to be really frustrating. But have you guys been impressed at all with how feisty?
No, absolutely. There are three of these games, and game one and game three were all really competitive. You know, you've seen a lot of good minutes. Reggie Jackson had a really great game in game three. And Marcus Morris continues to impress, put in good minutes. And Caldwell Pope is putting in good minutes. And the only thing I haven't liked about the Pistons are those stupid comments by Stanley Johnson, just that he's in LeBron's head.
I still love it.
Do you?
No,
love
you
it?
Gotta love the trash talk. No,
I do
man.
Love the like, trash
he's,
talk.
He's
man.
Coming at him, even if he isn't, you know, even if the numbers aren't reflecting.
Why in the world? If you're trying to beat this team, why in the world would you tell one of the best players of all time that I'm in your head at 19 years old and give LeBron that extra motivation to just drop like 40 on you?
Because
just,
I think
you don't give them whiteboard material.
I think you always trash talk.
And the next series, though, probably the most entertaining for my money in the Eastern Conference has been Boston and Atlanta. Definitely the best game we watched last night. Really inspired play down the stretch, though. Yeah. Before we get into that inspired play, please tell me you guys saw Marcus Smart that he's now been fined $5,000 for. Just
good.
Absolutely absurd flop.
Dude, it was one of the worst flops I've ever seen.
I feel like we get at least one or two every playoffs.
I mean, but this one he like, and we do, LeBron James is really guilty of these two, but this one he like jumped in the air and just like flung himself. back.
Like it actually looked like Marcus Smart might hurt himself flopping.
Well, there was a Derek Fisher one a few years ago that was really bad and he got fined for in the playoffs.
Yeah.
This one I think took the cake though.
This one's even worse. Well, there was Isaiah Thomas dropped 42
and one assist.
Yeah. Well, you know. He also
smacked Dennis Schroeder in the head and somehow didn't get suspended for it.
Budenholzer was pretty confident that he was going to get fined. Kyle Korver was pretty confident too. I was listening to some of their post game comments, and nope.
Yeah, if Kyle Korver wouldn't have fouled out on that game, I do think the Hawks would have won.
The Hawks shot 25% from three, mm-hmm. which could be why they didn't do that.
Well, Korver, like, he'd hit like two or three threes in a row in that fourth,
and then he
fouled out. And I was thinking, like, when's the last time Kyle Korver has ever fouled out of a game? Like, yeah. How often?
But
does
see,
that
here's
happen?
Here's my thing is so what they did is they took out Marcus Smart starting and they put in Turner. They took out. They put in Jarebko over Sullinger to go smaller. The Hawks had some trouble with it. Is this a bad sign for things to come when they play the Cavs? If the Cavs play small ball, the Hawks are going to have trouble. If they're having trouble with the Celtics,
no,
their bigs were just having
a rough game.
I will say though, if they're going to be shooting 25%, if they start, that's not going to fly against the Cavs. If the Cavs can keep
it was a bad shooting game,
and you keep Korver in foul trouble though, like that's going to be a major problem.
But they aren't. No one's going to keep Kyle Korver in foul trouble. Never happened.
Just putting the pressure on him though. And last year we saw how the Cavs beat the Hawks. They were really able to put that pressure down on Kyle Korver. They were really able.
It was
kind of
cool.
Shooting.
Thomas said that he was.
They did.
Thomas said that he got a text from Allen Iverson before the game, and Iverson said, "Keep fighting." They did what they're supposed to do in Atlanta. Now it's your time. You guys have to take the advantage of being home. And then apparently Isaiah Thomas also gave him a few tips, and so that was kind of cool to see. You know, the smaller point guards reaching out.
Isaiah Thomas is the shortest player to ever score score that many points in a playoff game.
Schroeder also had a highest scoring playoff game as well. But again, Atlanta was 2 for 17 from the 3-point line. That probably won't happen again.
Well, for the sake of time, we're not going to get too much into Miami and Charlotte. Miami is, for all intents and purposes, dominated that series so far. They're just, no pun intended, absolutely on fire from the field. It's going to be Batum is out for Charlotte too. You know, it's a pretty tough loss for them to come back from. Kemba Walker is pretty much their most dangerous weapon now, so it'll be interesting to see how he responds to the challenge. But we want to switch gears to a series that has been surprisingly competitive, depending on who you talk to, and that's Toronto Indiana. This game actually is just wrapping up as of recording this. Indiana, a big time win in game four. They really just beat up on Toronto all day. It's an absolutely just brutal game for DeMar DeRozan.
Lowry, you could see, was physically and mentally frustrated with...
It's just such a bad matchup for Toronto.
Yeah.
I mean, the Pacers have exactly what you need to shut down Toronto. You know what the shooting percentage is in the playoffs this year from DeRozan from three? Zero.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
No, it's bad. Lowry and DeRozan were just horrible from the field.
It's another one of those
like
things.
Game one, they just got completely flustered. DeRozan just, so many of his shots, especially in the second half, were just so ill-advised. And it looked like, you know, even when they were able to whittle down that lead a bit, just DeRozan would just take this horrific shot. Kyle Lowry fouled out. It's just a mess. It was a mess series. And Toronto, I mean, we're talking about Toronto. Are they going to take that leap? And are they going to challenge Cleveland? And they're already having trouble with Indiana. Is it like, I know it seems cliche that every time they lose, we go back to this. They did have a pretty dominant win in game two and game three. But it seemed like for me watching game four that the effort level wasn't there the way it was in game three. They didn't ratchet up the intensity.
My two thoughts are, one, the Pacers are kind of taking one out of the Clippers' books and saying, okay, we're going to shut down Lowry and DeRozan, and good luck with the rest of the team, you know what I mean? Like, they really pressure those guys. They don't really let them get any space at all.
Valanciunas has been playing really well. Patrick Patterson's been playing really well. Damari Carroll's been all right. Corey Joseph, though, offensive rating of 143, defensive rating of 103 in the series. You look at Kyle Lowry, offensive rating of 101, defensive rating of 103. Not good, Bob. Maybe they should think about playing Corey Joseph a bit more than they are.
But my question is this the Raptors kind of not living up to expectations, or is this more people were sleeping on the Pacers, like I've been saying?
I don't think it's either. I think it's simply a bad matchup. I think that the Pacers have exactly what you need to have to mm-hmm. shut down Toronto, and that happens to be Toronto's, you know, where they live and die by their backcourt, and they have George Hill and Paul George on them all the time, and it's they really great perimeter defenders shutting them down. And Solomon Hill's been really good. Miles Turner's been really good. Monte Ellis has actually been okay.
I wanted to point out, and I mentioned this again off the mic, but I wanted to point out that Carroll has been frustrating Paul George a whole lot because after his shot, he touches his elbow.
Right. Well, like after he comes back down.
Well, it's like it's debatable that you would think it's a foul, but it's so far after he shoots it that I think it's just in his head.
Yeah, I love so the strategy. Funny. I'm gonna do this now every time we play pickup.
Okay.
I'm just gonna tap your guys' elbow as soon as you get done shooting.
Yeah, that's what fair.
Can we talk about like Luis Scola, who is a pretty big part for Toronto in the regular season, who just has been a total non-factor? I mean, we know he is probably the weakest member of their starting five, but he has just given them absolutely nothing against Indiana.
Well, Miles Turner has just been shutting him down. Yeah. I mean, Luis Scola, he was good. That's a part of the debate we had earlier in the season was, should the Raptors go out and get Markieff Morris because their power forward position
was so weak.
It was so weak. I mean, Patterson's been playing really well. I've said that like four times now, but you know, at best, Patterson's a backup.
And I also wanted to, I guess it was last week I talked about how I was saying who was playing better, better rookie in the playoffs, Stanley Johnson or Justice Winslow. I think we should probably throw Turner into that, and it is probably Turner out of all those three because he's having the most impact right now.
Josh Richardson.
That's fair.
If you want to throw another rookie in.
That's fair. But, okay, so do you think Toronto's going to be able to turn this around, or do the Pacers actually?
Oh, I think Toronto's going to still win this series. I don't think Raptors fans should be worried about getting bounced out in the first round like they have the last two years.
I think they should be worried about it. I
think they should be worried. Worried going forward, but I think Toronto is too talented to lose to Indiana. I'd really like Lowry and DeRozan.
Paul George is too talented to lose in the first round.
Stop it. That may be true, but the rest of that team, absolutely not. DeRozan and Lowry, you got to look at it this way. Is Toronto's tied in this series, and they've gotten pretty much nothing out of both of them, especially DeRozan. If DeRozan breaks out of his slump, this could honestly get kind of ugly.
I really like DeRozan's dribble.
Why is that?
It's one that's very effective. It's very, I'm forgetting what his dribble specifically is called, but it's very controlled. Mm-hmm. DeRozan has a really nice dribble.
Okay. Speaking of dribbles, do you guys remember, this is kind of random, but do you guys remember the crab dribble incident with LeBron? You remember that back in the day? You don't remember that when LeBron, he was playing for Cleveland. It was the first sin around, and he took like three steps and he hit this layup, but he got called for traveling and it would have been a buzzer beater. And he freaked out. And he called it like when he carried the ball and took that step. He was like, it's a crab dribble. Like, it's a special kind of move that no one's ever heard of.
He created his own move. I'm going to learn the crab dribble.
You guys don't remember that, really?
No, I don't remember that at all.
Can't remember everything LeBron James does, man. Yeah, but, he does a lot of things.
But that was all over. I don't know. Anyway, we're wasting time. Well, thank you everyone so much for listening to this episode of the Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. You can always check out our episodes on our website, drivindishpodcast.com. And we want to give a shout out to the good folks at Blog Talk Radio for hosting the show. As always, you can check out our episodes as well on iTunes, Player FM, Stitcher, TuneIn. If it hosts the podcast, we're there.
And don't forget to go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/driveanddishpodcast. Also, download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab, type in promo code DISH.
And we're all over social media as well. You can like our Facebook page at Drive and Dish NBA Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Drive and Dish Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. If you're so inclined, you can also follow us individually on Twitter. Myself, Kevin, I'm at Refuse to Lose. Tim is at Radio Tim NBA. And Justin is at Justin C on the Air.
And if you haven't done so yet, make sure you send me a tweet and tell me what your favorite Prince song is.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da.
Hey! Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.